From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. People in the Los Angeles region are bracing for another day of what the National Weather Service calls a particularly dangerous situation. That is a rare warning beyond the typical red flag conditions and signifies the kind of high winds and low humidity that has led to what's projected to be the most damaging wildfire in American history.
Across the Los Angeles region, the skies were covered in smoke as fast-growing wildfires spread from winds that gusted to nearly 100 miles per hour.
This is as bad as I've ever seen, and of course, as a fire chief, I have the responsibility of overseeing public safety for such a beautiful town.
At least 10 people have been killed.
16 people are now reported to have died in the fire.
At least 24 people have died. About 24 more are missing, and a number of communities have been reduced to ash.
In Southern California, we used to think of the late fall as being fire season. Well, now fire season stretches out all year.
In the new year-long fire season, the scenes of devastation have been stunning. But for the brown colors, you'd think you were looking at photos of European cities at the end of World War II. And the human stories have been heartbreaking as well. Untold thousands of families displaced, and at least 24 people killed. The Los Angeles Times reported that a number of victims had refused to abandon their homes. Quote, 66-year-old Victor Shaw's burned body was discovered outside his Altadena home. He was clutching a garden hose. Andy Lee did not want that fate for his wife's parents. Lee was born and raised in Champaign, Urbana, and earned bachelor's and master's degrees from the Geese College of Business at U of I. He founded a finance company, Parallax's Capital, and several years ago moved to L.A. with his wife to be closer to her family, including her parents. Last Friday, when fire was threatening their area, the parents couldn't bring themselves to let go of their home, so he and his wife raced north to get them to safety. Andy agreed to share the full story with us. I spoke with him Monday afternoon. Andy Lee, welcome to the 21st Show. Thank you for making the time to speak with us.
Thanks for having me.
When did you first hear about the fires?
That would be Tuesday morning. It came across on the news that it was a relatively large blaze, albeit it's one of those things where it's early for wildfire season here in Los Angeles, but it's one of those things that you hear about on an annual basis. And generally, it's not something that really piques your attention. However, this one, just given the size and magnitude, as well as some of the increased reporting, intensity of reporting around it, brought it to our attention.
Now, do you live in a part of the Los Angeles area that was in danger?
Thankfully, we're about 10 miles south of where the actual fire was ongoing. On Thursday night, approaching Friday, it started having an impacting on the area that my in-laws live in.
And so which fire was that?
That would be the Palisades fire.
Palisades fire. Okay. So are you watching
this? There were a number of fires that were actually closed. The Kenna fire was actually less than 2 miles from my in-laws, but were able to get that under control relatively quickly.
Yeah. All right, so you're watching the news. You see these fires, this danger kind of coming for your wife's parents. Did you encourage them to leave? How did they react to that?
Initially, they brushed it off. They're like, this happens every year. There's nothing to worry about. And it was only on Friday night when their area hit a level two. Here in LA, there are three levels to wildfire. Level one is a warning, which is you should start thinking about a to-go bag. Level two is you should really start thinking about evacuating. And level three is just go. Like, anyway, like, don't even think about packing.
Yeah. Get on a bike
area,
if you have to. Yeah.
That area had been upgraded to a level two. My wife and I were having dinner in Century City at that point of time. And when we heard the news that it had been upgraded to a level two, we got on the phone with my sister-in-law to try to persuade her parents to start thinking about leaving. And it's one of those instances where they had built their lives here in Los Angeles for the better part of the last 30 years. And that home held those decades of hard work and memories. And so they were resistant to even thinking about leaving despite our pleas. And so on Friday, as we argued with them, we realized that it was something that they needed to be someone to be forced to leave. And so my wife and I drove up the main thoroughfare of Los Angeles, known as the 405, to get to their home in order to get them to leave.
What was the drive up like?
It actually looked apocalyptic, if I was to articulate it, primarily because you could see on the left side, which is the west side of the 405, starting to have embers on the horizon with dark smoke. And so typically when you think of a fire, there is small gray patches, and that typically doesn't tell you very much. It tells you probably that it's under control. The dark billows are typically where you see danger, where you start feeling danger, because that's a fresh fire. And basically the entire night sky was enveloped in black smoke.
So you get to your in-laws' house. Was it difficult at that point convincing them to leave? Could you smell it? Take me there. What was the scene like?
You could definitely see it from their driveway. I think only when we took them outside and they could see the flames did they start getting and realizing the magnitude and reality of the situation. And so my father-in-law was ready to go. My mother-in-law was just challenged and had paralysis as to leaving where she had brought up her two daughters. And so that's something that we were focused on getting her out. She was then focused on valuables and keepsake mementos, among others, many of them with little to no monetary value, but a lot of keepsake and memories associated with them. And so getting her to prioritize the items was incredibly challenging. It ultimately resulted in a little bit of a yelling match before she was in a position to depart.
How long would you say it took from when you pulled into the driveway to when you were pulling out?
It probably took us somewhere inside of 20 minutes.
Wow. So you felt like you had to move fast. What's everyone's situation now?
So currently they are staying with us in Playa Vista, which is an area directly north of LAX. And it's one of, it's a situation that we're monitoring the wildfires, specifically the one in the Palisades, primarily because the one in Pasadena is relatively far away, though she has some extended family in that area.
And it is your in-law's house. Do you know what the status of it is?
It currently remains in a level 2 situation, and something that they remain incredibly concerned. From time to time, over the course of a day, my in-laws remember an incremental item that they would have liked to have saved and muse about going back. But I'm not, my wife and I are not allowing them to return back to their home.
So you haven't been back yet. What is that like? Just sort of, I mean, it's been, you said this was Friday night. So that's what we're talking on Monday afternoon, three days now, I guess. Who knows how many more? What has that been like, just sort of watching and waiting?
I think when we first got them back on Friday night, it was incredibly anxiety-ridden insofar that, we got to safety, which we were incredibly thankful for, but I think that the challenge that we had is we needed to calm their nerves. And so you could see, even after we served her hot tea and she was seated comfortably on the couch, that her hands were still trembling. From the shock that had basically overtaken her from seeing, potentially having that being the last time seeing the home that she had raised her kids in, my mother-in-law. Over the course of the week, we tried to get them out of the house and going south. We went to visit my sister-in-law down in Orange County just to get them out about doing something and not thinking about the fire. That was the most important priority that we had over the course of this weekend.
What about where you reside? Can you smell the smoke now? Do you feel like, is the presence of the fire outside of your family, a fact of life? How do you think about that?
So the fires are currently, the winds are currently blowing into the southwest, into the Pacific Ocean, which is incredibly helpful, primarily because it clears much of the smoke that has enveloped and overcome most of Los Angeles over the course of the last week. As it pertains to what life looks like in Los Angeles, I took this call after we had just dropped off some donations at our local YMCA, and it's just a hustle and bustle of activity as people gather to try to help those less fortunate across donations, both food, water, basic necessities, in order to help them get their lives back into order.
Last thing I want to ask you about, there was an article in the New York Times Magazine, this is a few years ago now, but it was about the increasing fires. And it asked this question, has living in this natural wonderland, California, lost its magic? So my question to you is, has living in California lost any of its magic?
Not for me. I think that I've found Los Angeles to be a small piece of paradise and one that we've now decided to call home. Yes, there are incremental avenues for wildfire, among other natural items that may come to bear. There was a recent news article that suggested that Los Angeles actually may be in the center of a potential earthquake zone that may be activated in the not too distant future. TBD, how accurate that is, that obviously will compound some of the issues that we're having today. But I would say for those who call it home, I think it's an incredible place full of wonder and imagination. And it's just one of those places that I think you've come to love. And so, yes, I think that the coming days, weeks, months, years may be challenging, but I'm fully confident that Los Angeles will rebuild.
Andy Lee, thank you so much for being with us today. I appreciate it. And good luck to you and your family, really.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Andy Lee is the founder of Parallax's Capital. He's a Los Angeles resident and an alum of the U of I, as well as a born and raised Champaign-Urbanian. We are going to continue now. This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we're going to talk now about the broader causes and implications of the fire. Joining me for that is Bob Rauber. He is an emeritus professor of climate, meteorology, and atmospheric sciences at the U of I Urbana-Champaign. He was also director of the School of Earth, Society, and Environment, and he's the co-author of the textbook Natural Disasters, Hazards of the Dynamic Earth. Bob, thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Just a couple of minutes until we need to take the next break, but were you as shocked as the rest of us by how extreme these fires were?
I think everybody was shocked. I know 13 colleagues at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory who all lost their houses. So it's a tragedy beyond anything I thought would happen.
Yeah, why are fires like this why do they seem to be hitting more highly populated areas more often now?
I would say the highly populated areas are moving into places where the fires are likely to occur. If you look at where the fires occurred in this particular set of events, they're all right along the boundaries between the forests and the mountains, scenic areas where people like to live, and the plains just off of that. And so we've seen fires that come down off these mountains and then move over the populated areas.
Yeah, I think the urban planner types call this a WUI, the wildland-urban interface. California has had some terrible fires in recent years. How does this compare?
Well, I think this fire or the series of fires hit an extremely populated area. Some of the fires we've seen in the last several years were large fires, but were in more rural areas. It hit smaller towns, places like Paradise that was destroyed. But the but this particular set of fires is coming right down on one of the most populated places, in the United States. So I think that, we just see much more disaster.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a break. Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. You can join us today at 800-222-9455. We're going to be on this subject for the next 10 minutes or so, talking about the California wildfires. A couple of dozen people have been killed. Many more thousands have been displaced. Some have had their homes destroyed. Others are just staying with family elsewhere or wherever they can go, in shelters in some cases, riding out what Weather Service authorities today are calling a time of a particularly dangerous situation. That is a Weather Service term of art that's beyond the typical green, yellow, red flag conditions. So we're going to continue this conversation after a short break. My guest is Bob Rauber, who is a retired professor from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champain. Again, 800-222-9455 if you have a question or comment. More to come. This is the 21st show. Stay with us. This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we are talking about the California wildfires and their implications for not just the people of Los Angeles, but us here in Illinois. Earlier in the hour, we heard a personal story from Andy Lee, who is an LA resident who was born and raised in central Illinois, talked about getting his in-laws to safety as the fire was encroaching on their area last Friday. Now we're talking with Bob Rauber. He is an emeritus professor of climate, meteorology, and atmospheric sciences at the U of I Urbana-Champaign. He's also emeritus director of the School of Earth, Society, and Environment, and he literally wrote the book on natural disasters, co-author of a textbook called Natural Disasters, Hazards of the Dynamic Earth. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us today. 800-222-9455. Bob, you've studied the meteorology of fire. What's important for us to understand about how weather makes fires worse?
Well, I think the two things that are important. One is wind. Fires are driven by wind. And these firestorms that we've seen both in California, we saw it in Colorado and Hawaii, all occur when there are strong winds that and exceptionally dry winds as well. The second is humidity. Fires are very sensitive to humidity. If the wood can either absorb or desiccate moisture, depending on what the humidity is. So under the dry conditions with strong winds, that's when you get the situations like we see today in California.
I want to share some comments we've gotten from listeners. Joe in Harvard sent a text message that says, I think it'll be only a matter of years before we start seeing wildfires in Iowa and western Illinois, maybe even in the Chicagoland area, just like New York and New Jersey experienced this year. And Christopher in Brimfield said, we all better prepare ourselves for what will come in the future. Climate changes will disrupt our current economy in a very negative way. Bob, how about that? Are these sorts of wildfires something that could be in our future here in Illinois?
I think to the extremes we see in California, I would say no. But fires, grass fires in particular, occur in any of the Great Plains areas when we undergo drought conditions. So we've seen it more actually in the western plain states, where we've seen grass fires that move across huge areas and burn farmland and so on. Here we have a little more rain than further west, and so we typically have moisture conditions. That said, two of the biggest fires in terms of deaths occurred in Wisconsin. This is back in the 1800s, but it was over 1,000 people killed in each fire. Of course, it's more forested up there, but basically, if we have dry conditions and dry long enough that the whatever plants or forest desiccates, then fires are possible.
Yeah, I was thinking one of my colleagues mentioned this morning, the Great Chicago Fire of the 1800s. And, you know, you think about that. It's pretty rare. I do seem to remember, though, that we did have a fire warning in the past year or two. I don't know if that rings a bell with you.
I remember that well. Again, when we have strong winds, that's number one. If you have four strong winds and dry conditions, fire warnings should be issued, because if a fire does start, they move very quickly and are hard to control.
Hard to control, yeah. And we saw that certainly in California, where, you know, fire agencies, you know, maybe are designed to handle one fire per station house or something like that. But when an entire neighborhood, when an entire region starts burning, they can just be overwhelmed so quickly. You know, another piece of fallout we're thinking about with this is the insurance industry. People all over America, including right here in Illinois, we've all seen home insurance rates go up in recent years. How are insurance companies responding to disasters like this?
That's a very interesting question. My daughter lives in Houston, where they have hurricanes, and State Farm and all the major insurance companies have pulled out. They just can't afford to insure these areas anymore because it's economically unfeasible for them. And in California, of course, where you have the situation where you also have fires, but you also have earthquakes and floods, I mean, the insurance companies just pull out. And so in Florida, I saw just on 60 Minutes, but there was some smaller insurance companies that move in. But then there's a lot of fraud going on when there are claims. So I think insurance is going to be one of the big issues in the future, especially with the changing climate.
How do you think we should think about rebuilding in fire-prone areas despite these risks? I read articles. You know, you always see these stories at this time. People are burned out of their homes. And of course, they want to get back to what they had or as close as they can to it. They want to rebuild. Maybe there's insurance restrictions on how they use the money. But is it wise? Should we be doing some sort of grander rethinking of how we rebuild after disasters like this?
Absolutely. I think that there are some common sense things that I think can be done. One is to have buffer zones where you design fire breaks into a community so that there are places where a fire can naturally stop and fire engines can get in there. There are, you know, in other disasters like floods, you know, you have a buffer zone between the river and where you put a community. These all make sense, but you know, they're hard to implement because it requires, you know, acquisition of lands that may be owned by someone else and so on. But there are common sense things that I think in rebuilding that can protect areas and still allow people to live there.
Yeah, managed burns is another one I've heard about. Although even there, I heard a great interview last week where somebody was saying, you know, California tried to do some of these managed burns. And then, you know, every now and then things get a little out of control with one of those. A few people lose their homes. There's public outcries and the government pulls back. How do you think about that?
Yeah, that's exactly right. We saw that recently in New Mexico, I believe. It was either New Mexico or I can't remember, it was either Colorado. I think it was New Mexico, where a control burn went out of control, and there was a lot of, you know, legal challenges and so on after that. That really makes it skittish to go ahead and try a control burn.
But is it worth the risk?
I would say it depends where you're going to do it. The more you are in a built area, the higher the risk is going to be. You know, if you're in an area where there's not many structures and not much threat to human property or life, then it's probably a reasonable thing to do. But when you could potentially set a community on fire, you know, it becomes a very risky situation that I don't think anyone wants to take a chance on.
We have just a few minutes left in our time together. I do want to ask about how this affects us here in Illinois. David Molitor, who's a professor of finance at the Gies College of Business at Illinois, he co-authored a study that found wildfire smoke led to an increase in depression, anxiety, and suicide risk in rural communities. I can certainly remember summer of 23 here in central Illinois, We had smog. The sunset was this weird orange color. Yep. What do we know about these effects from wildfires beyond the states where they occur?
The main issue with smoke, I think, is PM2.5. These are small particles that can get deep into your lungs, and those are produced in smoke. So if you're exposed to smoke for a long time, you have potential for lung disease. Also, another aspect of it is particularly in places like Los Angeles, is when you have houses burning, you not only have wood smoke, but you have plastics and all sorts of other chemicals that are burning as well, and those can be toxic. So, the threat from wood smoke is real. We saw situations like last year where New York the sky was orange. I mean, actually not at the sky, but actually the environment right outside your window was orange with smoke from Canada. So it's a serious issue for health. I think a very short-term exposure to smoke is probably something you can recover from. But if you have to work in that environment for a long time or live in that environment, that the health risks are real. Now, I'm not a doctor, so I can't really tell you details about that, but it just makes sense. You don't want to be living in a smoky place.
No, anyone who stood next to a bonfire knows that. Last question. Here in Illinois, we face a different set of climate threats and risks. What do you see as some of the biggest risks we are going to be confronting?
Well, we are an agricultural state, and that's our business here. And I think the biggest threats from climate change are going to be related to agriculture. We're going to see a shift in temperature over time, a shift in rainfall patterns, and that's going to impact how people farm. And it's also, I think, a second thing is that with those shifts, particularly the shift in temperature, pests that normally may not make it through a winter here may make it through a winter in the future. So we may see an additional influx of problems associated with various diseases and pests that affect our farmland. So I think that's number one. Number two is we will see more heat waves in this area. We saw the big heat wave in Chicago back in 1995. You can see this happening in the temperature records that the heat waves, when we have them, are a little bit stronger and last a little bit longer. And so we're going to have to deal with that as well.
Bob Rauber, Emeritus Professor from the University of Illinois, thanks for being with us and sharing your expertise with us today on the 21st Show.
Hey, thanks for having me.